Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network, AFR. Thanks for listening. Joining me to co-host today is Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Yes, sir. We are here ready to go.
Well, by the way, coming up at 10:45 Central Time, that's for those of you who live in the U.S. of A., we're going to have Erica Kazrahi on our program. She is Vice President of Human Rights Policy for the Middle East. She was the lady we featured, or we linked to, rather, about 10 days ago or so. She's an Iranian who now lives in America. I'm assuming she's a U.S.
citizen. Here for 12 years, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
And she knows, Fred, tell her, just give our folks a couple sentences, and we're going to have her on to explain things, but why are we having her on?
Yes, well, she grew up as a child in Iran, and she knew the workings of Soleimani, the one that was taken out by our military people just a couple of weeks ago. And she told the world in that five-minute piece that we played the other day what an evil man he was. Killed his own people. And she was a little appalled at how some people here in America, when he was taken out by our military, started describing him as what, a poet?
Yes, some described him as a poet
and a great general.
A revered leader.
And yeah. She said, you know, almost like, what world are these people living in?
Yeah.
Because she knew the real Soleimani. She also told us about behind the scenes, probably what you didn't see on CNN. She said they were celebrating the death of Soleimani.
And that the Iranian people do not hate America.
That's right. That's right. So she opened the door to us on a story that's not being told for the most part about the people of Iran. They want freedom, just like Americans want freedom.
I don't know where Erica is politically, liberal, conservative, moderate, or whatever. It really doesn't matter. I want to hear what she has to say. Because she is an Iranian American who knows what's going on back in that country, and the video that we posted on our website of her from YouTube, I guess it was very insightful. So we look forward to having Erica on our program in a little while. Also, Abraham Hamilton III will be on at the bottom of the hour. Well, you may have heard in the United States Senate they're having a picnic.
But they're only allowed to bring water and milk.
They are also bringing some mud to sling around at each other, the Republicans and the Democrats. Tell us the latest, Fred. This is, of course, the impeachment trial, right?
Yes, it opened yesterday, and for roughly almost 12 hours yesterday, the main point after the opening remarks was Chuck Schumer, the Senate Minority Leader, Democrat, started putting in amendments that he wanted. And the basic thrust of all of these amendments, there were eight of them, and they want, the Democrats, they want witnesses, more witnesses, and documents. And Mitch McConnell said right off the top that he would table each of those. They could have their – each party, after the amendment was read into the official document of the Senate trial. Each side, Democrats, had an hour to make their case for the amendment, and then the president's legal team had an hour. So you had eight amendments, do the math, folks, 1 hour each on each of those. That is why at 1 or 1:30 this morning, they were still in session, and that's when things started to heat up. Your mudslinging comment. That's when Gerald Nadler, one of the lawyers for the Democrats. He's also the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. He really started getting nasty, telling senators they're part of a cover-up because they're not agreeing to these witnesses and calling executive privilege nonsense. Here's Gerald Nadler, cut number one.
The question is whether the Senate will be complicit in the president's crimes by covering them up. Any senator who votes against Ambassador Bolton's testimony or any relevant testimony shows that he or she wants to be part of the cover-up. What other possible reason is there to prohibit a relevant witness from testifying here? Unfortunately, so far I've seen every Republican senator has shown that they want to be part of the cover-up by voting against every document and witness proposed. President Trump does not want you to hear from Ambassador Bolton. And the reason has nothing to do with executive privilege or this other nonsense.
So there you have it. That's Gerald Nadler. And at that point, he got on the nerves of some people there, including part of the president's legal team. And Trump attorney Pat Cibollone responded to that outrageous comment from Nadler. Cut number two.
We came here today to address the false case brought to you by the House managers. We've been respectful of the Senate. We've made our arguments to you. And you don't deserve, and we don't deserve, what just happened. Mr. Nadler came up here and made false allegations against our team. He made false allegations against all of you. He accused you of a cover-up. He's been making false allegations against the president. The only one who should be embarrassed, Mr. Nadler, is you for the way you've addressed this body. This is the United States Senate. You're not in charge here.
And
also, Nadler used the term crimes. Did you notice that?
We're talking about the cover-up of the crimes.
What crimes?
This is the whole thing. It's hard for me to understand how the Democrats can't see the internal contradiction here. They're claiming that the president has obstructed Congress and abused power. I think those are the two high crimes and misdemeanors that they're accusing the president of. But their demands are that we have more witnesses than what they had in that sham in the House and more documents. They want to bring more people in. And to me, if you had evidence to charge the president with these two crimes in terms of high crimes and misdemeanors, then you don't need more evidence.
That's
right. But if you need more evidence, then you didn't have enough to impeach the president, so why did you vote for impeachment? I don't see how they get out of this. They're between the two horns of this dilemma, and now they are demanding that the Senate allow them to basically build their case, the case they didn't build in the House.
Even though they told, the Democrats did, they had a rock-solid case against the president. So if they had a rock-solid case, why all of a sudden are they making these demands? To the point about the one article of impeachment, obstruction of Congress.
Right.
What they're talking about there is the president using executive privilege. And Jay Sekulow, the President Trump's personal attorney, who's part of the defense team there, he zeroed in on this. Executive privilege has been used a long time by all presidents. Cut number three.
Chairman Nadler talked about treacherous. At about 12:10 a.m., January 22nd, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee at this body, on the floor of this Senate, said executive privilege and other nonsense. Now think about that for a moment. Executive privilege and other nonsense. Mr. Nadler, it is not nonsense. These are privileges recognized by the Supreme Court of the United States. And to shred the Constitution on the floor of the Senate, to serve what purpose? The Senate is not on trial. The Constitution doesn't allow. Only guilty people try to hide evidence. So I guess when President Obama instructed his attorney general to not give information, he was guilty of a crime. That's the way it works, Mr. Nadler? Is that the way you view the United States Constitution?
And what he's referring to,
home run.
I think that or he bingoed.
Yeah.
What he's referring to there is Obama stopping Eric Holder, his attorney general,
right,
from testifying with regards to the gun running scandal,
right,
that that his attorney general oversaw.
Fast and furious.
And there is a separation of powers by design of our founders in the U.S. Constitution. So when Congress says to the president, we demand to hear from John Bolton, even though executive privilege says that the president's staff and advisors have to keep certain things secret,
mm-hmm.
okay? When Congress says, we demand that these kinds of people in your inner circle come and talk to Congress, and if you don't allow that, you're obstructing Congress, well, Democrats, there is a separation of powers. These are co-equal branches.
Which is why Democrats and Republicans in the White House have used executive privilege for all kind of different reasons. And President Obama did not want Attorney General Holder
mm-hmm.
testifying in the Fast and Furious,
Gun running.
Gun running. Well, and so...
Because he was probably guilty, okay? Probably. I don't know. But, I mean, President Obama, rightfully so, in terms of the Constitution, invoked a right that he had to shield his AG from being questioned on this matter.
And what did the Republican-controlled members of Congress do about that? Nothing. When Eric Holder did not come to speak.
Could they?
They couldn't do anything. Because
I guess they could have impeached if you follow the Democrats' prescription.
That's what Jay Sekulow was saying.
Yeah.
He's saying they didn't. The Republicans respected the Constitution because there is a separation of powers between the executive branch and the legislative branch. And when President Obama told Eric Holder not to go, and Eric Holder, I'm sure, didn't want to go, then Congress couldn't do anything. The Republicans knew that's just the way the Constitution is written.
And again, Ed, as you pointed out, again, this is all hyperbole. Is that what you call it? This is just a show that the Democrats have. This is a Broadway show.
Yeah.
But no singing and dancing. Which is very disappointing.
So, in other words, nothing entertaining about this.
Nothing entertaining about this, and But the reason it's the show is we can have the vote right now. All right? And Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, knows this. We can have the vote right now. Everyone in the Senate knows how they're going to vote based on what the House already has provided them.
Right.
Okay? The question and what the White House has provided them by putting that call transcript out there. So, I don't know. The idea that there is a cover-up of something that the president himself exposed to the world, right, how do you cover up something that he put out there for all the world to see?
Voluntarily.
And the Ukraine did get the money.
Yeah.
There was a time of, it was withheld for a little while, but I don't know how long that was, but they got the money that was appropriated.
They never investigated Burisma or Hunter Biden or Joe Biden.
The president of Ukraine said there was no pressure on me.
Said there's no pressure.
And the Ukrainian president had a subsequent visit to the White House, and this wasn't, as far as I know, this wasn't even brought up.
So
the Democrats keep changing their, and I'm not saying Republicans in the history of our country haven't also manipulated facts and or lied. Okay,
right.
We're all humans capable of that.
Right.
I'm just saying in this case, the Democrats are intentionally lying because they know they won't be held accountable before by the media, which is there to hold them accountable. That's why a couple more examples here. Well, we remember when Adam Schiff, who, by the way, I got to give it to him, this is 74 days he's gone without blinking. And, I mean, it's an amazing feat by any human. But anyway, he's the one, you remember, who he's the chairman of the
House Intelligence.
House
Intelligence Committee.
Okay, I could go a long way.
Yeah, that was.
I could go off on that, but
that
I won't.
That was a softball.
The House, quote, Intelligence Committee, he's the chairman. Okay, he's the one, you remember when they had, they started the hearing, he made up this phony scenario and used it to read, right, about, it was like and he wanted the country, people who watched that video, to believe he was actually given facts.
Well, and made it sound like these were the president's own words.
Yes.
Remember?
He made it sound like these were the president's own words. That was just completely inappropriate, to say the least, for a chairman of a committee that's about to get started investigating.
It was let me just say it. It was a lie. It was an intentional lie,
okay,
to try to frame the president as guilty before they even began.
He wanted that narrative, that video, to go viral out across America, and nobody really paying attention to anything else. So he's also, there are numerous other ways that Schiff has discredited himself over and over again, which can be documented.
You're saying that no matter what happens in this process in the Senate, everybody, including the Democrats, already know how they're voting.
Yes, this is a waste of time, energy, money. I don't know what else word. They just need to vote. They can vote right now in the Senate on whether to, and they're not going to be any different than next week or 2 weeks from now, or whenever this thing is supposed to.
Because if John Bolton did come, you're not going to have a single Democrat go, oh, that's what the president meant. Okay, I'm changing my vote to not guilty. That's not going to happen.
Right. So anyway, they could vote today, and we all know what's going to happen here. How long is this going to take, Fred?
Well, today begins 3 days that the Democrats have to make their case, to make their arguments. 8 hours today, 8 hours tomorrow, 8 hours Friday. And then the president's team has 3 days, 8 hours a day, to make their case. So that brings us up, what, to next Tuesday. Next Tuesday, there's about 16 hours set aside for debates and questions. Okay, I assume maybe the senators have a right at that point to ask questions. And then at that point, you may have a vote on whether to allow witnesses and further documents, the demands of the Democrats.
Right.
But, you know, guys, this is part of a campaign. Anybody who believes that in the idea of impeaching the president just started a few months ago,
right,
after the July 2019 conversation. Well, apparently, one Democrat senator, Mazie Hirono of Hawaii, she was being interviewed yesterday, and she called the claim that Democrats wanted to impeach Trump from day one a weird conspiracy theory. That's what she said. She called it a weird conspiracy theory. Well, this morning on Fox and Friends, they played a montage of Democrats going back to 2017 when they were talking about we need to impeach this president. 2017, almost 3 years ago.
Do we have that?
We've got that for you.
Oh, good.
Hits from the past?
Yes. Here we go. Cut number five.
We got from the president's people, where really what I found astounding was they're still saying that we were out to get the president from day one, some kind of a weird conspiracy theory that I have to say even Kavanaugh brought out. This, they really believe this stuff? I find it incredible.
Let's take you back to day one.
I will fight every day until he is impeached. Page 45.
Donald John Trump, by causing such harm to society, is unfit to be president, warrants impeachment, trial, and removal from office.
He should resign, but if he doesn't resign, he should be impeached.
What is the best thing for the country? It may be that we undertake an impeachment nonetheless.
Well, Donald Trump is either going to be impeached by the Congress or impeached at the ballot box.
If proven, some of this would be impeachable, yes.
All right.
Obstruction of justice, if proven, would be impeachable.
All before the conversation with President Lewinsky last July.
And
all of that.
And Nancy Pelosi said you know, somebody said, when did impeachment start? Oh, it basically, she said it started 3 years ago.
Yeah, 2016.
So, again, this is a...
Lies, lies, lies.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And I admit, like you said, Tim, Republicans can lie too. But in this case, Democrats are clearly lying.
Yeah, and this is extremely serious. This is trying to put handcuffs on the President of the United States, the duly elected president, and remove him from office, physically remove him from office over this.
Yeah, over this phone call.
Well, and, as a lot of people have said, because they know they can't defeat him this fall.
Yeah.
The numbers are showing that the president's popularity is growing as this impeachment thing goes along.
Well, there was a Democratic congressman who said, explicitly stated, if we don't impeach him, he's liable to win
right.
in 2020. This is how we have to stop
right.
him.
Yeah. The president, President Trump, as his character, you know, is very conciliatory and very forgiving man, and he called the Democrats, quote, major sleazebags.
We have that. We have that.
We do have
he
that.
He made that comment, the president did this morning in Davos, Switzerland, before he left for home.
By the way, there was Representative Al Green I was talking about. I'm concerned if we don't impeach this president, he will win re-election in 2020.
Yeah.
So. Right.
So here's the president this morning in Davos, Switzerland, and when asked about the impeachment process so far.
Gerald Nadler, I've known him a long time. He's a sleazebag. Everybody knows that. Our country's been tied up with this hoax from the day I came down the escalator. We've been fighting it. I've been fighting it from the day I've been elected. I would say probably long before. It could be long before I came down the escalator. That some people have said that, which is hard to believe. Wait, John. It's hard to believe. We've been fighting this. I would rather have... Personally, I'd rather go the long route. It's horrible for our country. Our country has to get back to business.
There you have that. That's the president this morning in Davos, Switzerland.
Sleazebag.
Yeah.
Sleazebag, Jerry Nadler, mm-hmm. what he called him. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on AFR. By the way, if you want to watch the show on Facebook or YouTube, we are live video streaming right there, ladies and gentlemen. Just go to Today's Issues for YouTube or Facebook. We're also posting the stories that we're talking about on the Facebook page. Yes,
I'd have to say the president went too far, I think, calling Jerry Nadler a sleazebag. I think sleazeball, I think, is probably more accurate. Sleazebag, that's going a little too
far. Is that going far. A little
that's
step too far?
Far? That's yeah. too far. Sleazeball, I think, is probably more accurate.
Sleazebag is New York. Sleazeball is Boston.
Yeah, right? That's right. There you go. All right.
Well, both of them are New Yorkers.
Yeah, that's right.
President Trump and Jerry Nadler he's a congressman from New York. Again, we can vote right now. Everybody knows how they're going to vote. There's nothing new going to be presented here. I don't know where the Democrats will go after this. Of course, they'll try to beat President Trump in November. But should they lose their impeachment attempt, I guess you could say, then all they got left is trying to beat him in November, which doesn't look promising.
Yeah, they can't impeach him again, because then it would be clear that they're just going to spend all their time trying to get him out of office way.
I tell you what, of course, we are 8, 9, 10 months from now for the presidential election, but should President Trump win again, should the Republicans maintain the Senate by 3 or 4 vote margin, which is very likely, and on the outside chance that they, although Fred thinks it's better than an outside chance, I would call it an outside chance at this point, on the outside chance that the Republicans take back the House of Representatives, and all you need is to take the House by one vote and you control all the chairmanships.
Right.
You talk about a death blow, I guess you could say, to the Democrat Party. I don't know what would become of their party such that it is, should those things line up. We'll be back in a moment with more of Today's Issues on AFR.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Dr. Alex McFarland of Exploring the Word.
Since 1973, it's been assumed and legislated and frankly enforced that the assumed rights of the mother trump the guaranteed rights of the child.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
The Hand of Providence. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. That's what George Washington, the father of our country, called God's work in our country, the Hand of Providence. It is amazing and astounding, the stories that go on and on and on about how the Lord intervened to create the United States of America as a very special place on the globe. We're going to see all this history, as much as we can at least, in Jamestown, Yorktown, and Williamsburg. That's in Virginia. And then we're also going to Washington, D.C., and George Washington's Mount Vernon Estate. We're going to do this in June and September, and you can join us by finding out all the information at spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com. We hope to see you then.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes, and folks, Liberty University believes a private Christian education should be affordable to everyone. That's great, right? It doesn't matter if you're from California or Maine or anywhere in between, you may qualify for up to $20,780 over 4 years through Liberty's Middle America Scholarship. For more information, text MAS to the number 839-858 today. Again, that's MAS to the number 839-858. Former Vice President Joe Biden spoke at a Baptist church in South Carolina the other day, and he defiled the pulpit. Mr. Biden compared President Trump to Bull Connor, the racist public safety commissioner in Birmingham, Alabama. It should be noted that Bull Connor was a lifelong Democrat. Mr. Biden then likened supporters of the president to the KKK. Now, at that point, the pastor or the deacon should have physically removed the former vice president from the pulpit, but that did not happen. Instead, he went on to spew lies about how the president called the neo-Nazis very fine people. Again, that did not happen. It was not true. Vice President Joe Biden should be condemned for race baiting in the church house. He's an unrepentant liar who defiled the pulpit of a Baptist church. That alone should disqualify him from public office, but in the Democrat Party, they consider that to be a badge of honor. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Don't forget, Erica Khosrowi will be with us in a few minutes. She's the Iranian-American, or the American who grew up in Iran. She's the Vice President of Human Rights Policy for the Middle East. And
that's with All Things Possible is a ministry.
It's a ministry?
Yeah, All Things Possible. They help people traumatized, people victims of trafficking, that kind of thing.
Okay, well, we look forward to hearing from her. She had a fascinating video. I don't know if you'd call it going viral or not, but it went all over the country. And she was talking about what the feelings were of the Iranian people upon learning the death of Soleimani. Is that his name?
Qasem Soleimani.
And I was moved by what she had to say and look forward to hearing from her in person here on the radio in just a few minutes on Today's Issues. Real quickly, folks, you need to go to our website, afa.net, and sign up for our action alerts. We send out about two of these a week, and they're just what they say they are. They're take action alerts on different issues affecting our country. We have 800,000 people or so get these, and they're very effective in making a difference in our nation. So afa.net, just sign up.
All we need your email address. We're not going to sell your email address to anybody.
That's right.
We're not giving it away. We're not tricking you into anything. It's simply an email you get twice a week, afa.net, with to take actions. It takes you about 3 to 5 minutes on various and different issues. One of the things we've been tracking, Ed, the Target company.
Right.
That's the national retail chain. Of course, about 2 or 3 years ago, they announced that they were allowing men into women's restrooms and changing areas in their stores, and they were proud of this fact. It's part of the transgendered, affirming wokeness,
yes,
of corporate America. And we warned that this would lead to dangerous situations for females in their stores. And here we have another case of something just happened.
That's right, and that's our lead action alert for this week. And, of course, what we have argued is that in trying to demonstrate how woke they are with the transgender community, their policy was going to allow sexual predators access to women and girls in the bathrooms and changing areas, and we have seen a steady stream of that actually happening. The latest example we have comes from a story from a news station, KTRK. This is in Texas, and a Texas woman filed a report with the Harris County Sheriff's Office after a man entered the women's fitting room area and took pictures of her as she was changing clothes. So what these predators do, because nobody will stop now a man from entering these areas because he may identify as a woman, okay? They don't stop him. So what these men do is they go into, they watch for a woman or a girl to go into a fitting room, for example. They go into the one next to it and then put their phone camera either up above the partition or below it. And that is what happened in this case in Harris County, Texas. And so the woman said she noticed that a cell phone camera was being held and pointed right at her from under the fitting room. This is the fitting room
door. Target store. Where was the Target store?
This was in Texas, Harris County, Texas.
That's in the Houston area.
It would be Houston. By the way, Abraham Hamilton III, who is in and was a assistant district attorney.
In Harris County.
So this is a direct result, and we have countless examples of this.
Yeah.
The Target's policy allows these sexual
predators. They allow
men
into women's changing areas.
Yes.
I mean, how ridiculous is that?
Right.
Millions of people are boycotting Target because of this, because it's just insane to allow men into women's restrooms or changing areas. I mean, can they not? I don't care if you're a man and you think you're a woman. You're a biological male. You go to the men's changing area.
Right.
Okay? Try on your dresses there.
Right.
All right? I'm being facetious here. But you get the idea. You shouldn't put... There's a reason. There's a reason we had separated changing areas and restrooms. There's a reason for that. And if you and what these transgendered activist folks want to do is say those reasons don't matter.
Right.
And they're invalid. Really, why have we had them for thousands of years?
That's right.
In cultures and civilizations all over the world.
Right.
You go anywhere in the world, guess what? You're going to have a men's room, a women's room. Are you going to have a changing area? Women's showers, men's showers. Everywhere in the world.
This isn't just the bigoted, narrow-minded Christian West. This is everybody does it this way.
Yeah. And if you start allowing men, we're seeing this in schools too. You start allowing men to go into women's restrooms and changing areas because they identify as a woman, then you're going to see it pretty soon. You're seeing this in high schools.
Right.
Where 16-year-old boys want to look at girls without clothes on.
Right.
So what do they do? I'm a girl. I feel like a girl today.
Right.
You know? So this is just insanity masquerading as civil rights. And what Ed told you about the story from Target in Houston area, go to afa.net. All right, Fred, you got a story for the counselor to comment on?
Yes, sir. As we sit here today, arguments are being made before the United States Supreme Court, and it has to do with a program in Montana, the state of Montana, which allows a $150 tax credit for a person who contributes to a private school scholarship program. And what the opposition to this program is all about is this money could go to Christian schools. And, of course, the usual crowd, sometimes teachers' unions, sometimes the ACLU and others, object to this because they're passing over that separation of church and state. So lower courts in Montana have ruled against this, but those who defend it and say, no, it's not a contravention of the Blaine Amendment, I think it is, Abe, have taken this all the way to the Supreme Court. So it's kind of like, you know, you make contributions to your church, you get a tax credit for it. This is the kind of the idea in Montana. You get up to $150 tax credit contributing this scholarship program, which then could go to send Johnny or Jane to a Christian school, and usually there's opposition to it. So that's what's being heard, Abe, today before the United States Supreme Court.
Yeah, and it's $150, like you said, and a tax credit would go to a person who wants to enroll their child or children into a private school. In Montana, I believe the statistic is something along the lines of 70% of the private schools in Montana are religiously affiliated, is the term that they're using. If you remember back in 2017, there was a case out of Missouri, the Trinity Lutheran case, where the state of Missouri had a program that allowed anybody to apply for a grant to rehabilitate playgrounds. And you had one church, you had a school associated with it, Trinity Lutheran, that made the mistake of applying for the grant. Well, the Supreme Court in 2017 ruled 7-2, that, what are you doing, Missouri, you idiots? Because a church happens to have a school doesn't disqualify them based on their religious affiliation and identity from being able to participate in a program to rehabilitate playgrounds. And specifically, there was a lot of consternation over footnote 3 in that opinion, because Justice Clarence Thomas wrote separately to concur with the ultimate judgment, but saying, what are we doing? There's nothing in the Constitution that prohibits an organization because they happen to be religiously affiliated from participating in the statewide program. And so I think opponents to this measure see what's happening in Montana as the next step. They are going to try to construe this as directly funding religious inculcation. And I think that is a bridge too far. That's overblowing what's happening. And I think it's instructive to note that the Supreme Court took this case.
Mm. Let me ask you this, Abe. I do understand and I don't understand the school choice opposition. Okay. I give you an example in our own lives. I know you homeschool your children.
Yes.
And so I'm going to leave the homeschooling discussion out of what I'm about to ask you.
Sure.
But in our situation, I'm a grandparent, but we're looking with my daughter at sending our multiple grandchildren to Christian school, mm-hmm. which costs money. Mm-hmm. All right. why wouldn't I, or no, not me necessarily, but my children who have children who are going to go to these Christian schools, why do they have to pay double? Okay, and not really, I mean this, because I know you know I mean this. Okay, because they pay taxes for public schools. Mm-hmm. All right, then if my grandson is not going to go to a public school, but is rather going to go to a private Christian school, the public school is not going to get the money that they would get should my grandson go there per student in the state of Mississippi or wherever. Am I right about that? It's about $10,000 a year. So their public school would not get the money should my grandson not go to the public school, right?
That's the way it's supposed to work.
But they're not going to miss that money because they're not having to be responsible for the child.
That's right.
So it's a wash.
Should be.
Should be a wash. So I don't understand the objection from people who say that someone who sends their child to a Christian school couldn't get the tax credit, you know what I'm saying, be able to get the tax credit for sending their child to a Christian or private school. Why does somebody object to that?
You want the real reason?
Well,
or
most people I think are fair-minded. Why would you care whether I use a tax credit to send my child to a Christian school? That's not, how is that harming your public school?
Well, the argument that they will make is that you are reducing, if your money isn't sent to the public school, you are negatively impacting the proliferation of public education. Because even if it doesn't go to that particular school, the money will go into the pot that's able to be used to fund public education in your state.
But wait a minute. But wait a minute. I know you're arguing their argument. But what I'm saying is, okay, I understand that. But my child is not going to the public school. Therefore, it's not going to cost you any money. You see what I'm saying? So I don't understand why
this is putting me in an uncomfortable situation for arguing for something that I don't agree
with. I know. But you learned that in law school anyway.
Yeah, but the argument that they're gonna respond with is that your personal decision where to send your grandchildren or your children to school shouldn't destroy the public education system. It's almost like Obamacare. Everybody has to participate for it to work.
We can argue this round and round, dog chasing the tail here. But I would say my child not going to the public school is not harming the public school system.
Your money not going to the public school system.
But my kid isn't going.
They don't care about your kid, Tim.
Well, besides, the part of the money, maybe as much as half of the money, doesn't go to educate your child anyway. It goes to the bloated bureaucracy.
Oh, okay, now
and gives all those administrators and stuff big raises.
Yes, that's why I was saying, do you want the real reason or you want the argument that they're going to offer on the surface?
Well, hey, that's a reason I understand.
Yeah.
But the next level is it a reason you agree with?
No, I don't agree.
And if we are a government of the people, by the people, should you be compelled to support a systematic structure that you don't agree with?
I just don't understand why people, all my children, all my three kids, and they're in the 30s, late 20s and 30s now, they went to public school. I grew up in the public school system. I'm not against public
schools. My kids went to public
schools. I'm not against public schools per se at all. But I'm just saying that I don't understand why you have to be put in the position of saying public schools, I'm for the best you can provide in public schools. But why does people who say that say, but I'm against you using your money to go to a Christian school because
you're taking your money out of the kitty.
I just don't like it. Yeah, but how do you say you're for freedom and liberty? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then say, no, I'm against you being allowed to use your
liberty,
a tax credit, if you will, to send your kid to a Christian school. I just don't understand why the vehement objection to that by people who would otherwise be, they may themselves be Christian.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So anyway, I hope we'll see what happens with this Montana case. Well, joining us now is Erica Kusrai. Yeah, Erica, did I get that right or even close?
You did. I'm really impressed that you tried. You did well.
So is my wife and everybody who knows me.
We're all proud of America.
They're all proud of me because I butcher names often. Erica, thanks for being on with us here on AFR. You are Vice President of Human Rights Policy for the Middle East with All Things Possible. Tell us about the organization and what you do there.
Absolutely. So the Victim Marks Group aims to continue international humanitarian work that has been led by Victor and Eileen Marks. We engage in policy, strategy, and global discussions with partners who are dedicated to alleviating poverty, sex trafficking, oppression of basic human rights and freedom, and specifically my role in the Middle East.
Okay. You did a video after the Soleimani death a couple weeks ago. That is the Iranian general who was slain and killed by President Trump's by President Trump. What was your purpose of doing that video?
Well, really, I had a lot of friends just reaching out to me and saying, hey, what do you think about what's going on in Iran? You know, are we going to war? what does this all mean? And I sensed a bit of fear kind of rising up in the American public, you know, friends that I know in my own network. And so I started to watch the news, and I started to see how the mainstream media was really just being, I felt like they were just injecting fear into the public. And I just wanted to set the record straight, because what I was seeing coming out of Iran and out of Iraq and the Middle East was a completely different narrative. And I just felt like it was the right thing to do. I was watching Iranians baking cakes and cookies and giving out fruit to their neighbors and celebrating. And I just wanted to set the record straight for my network. I had no idea it was going to go viral. And, you know, since then, I'm humbled and grateful for the
I have a theory. Support. I have a theory, Eric, and I don't want to drag you into politics you don't wish to discuss, but I just have a theory here. It was the reason that the reaction from the media and many in the international community was what it was. Instead of celebrating the death of a guy who's murdered thousands and thousands of people and has fomented unrest and hostilities all across the Middle East, is because it was President Trump who took him out. And they don't like President Trump, and they don't want to do anything that gives him credit for this. How do you feel about that?
You're absolutely right. I mean, I was on with Laura Ingraham last week, and she asked me the same question. And I just feel like, you know, we live in a time where no matter what President Trump does, he can do no right in the eyes of the left. And if anyone praises him, we're automatically demonized. I've gotten hate mail. You know, I've gotten death threats to, you know, try to shut me up about my support. I mean, I believe that I represent Iranian Americans in this country who support Trump. And in fact, there are Iranians inside the country who see him as a hero. You know, he tweeted out in Farsi in support, standing with the Iranian people after they started protesting, after the death of Soleimani and after the downing of the Ukrainian airliner. You don't know how much that empowered Iranian people. They see him as a hero. And it's just bizarre to me how in this country we haven't come alongside of our president to support the things that he's done. We're all sinners. We all do bad things. We all need to be forgiven. He's not a saint, you know,
right,
but he
right.
you know, he is the leader of the free world and the president of our country. So
yeah,
that's how I feel about it.
Eric, it's Fred here. I ask you a question. I get the impression you're a Christian.
I am. I converted from Islam when I was 12 years old.
Did that happen when you were in Iran? Because we've heard stories of the Christian community growing in Iran. And I guess the second part of that question, is that part of the opposition that we're seeing today that celebrated the death of Soleimani, that they see this as an opportunity for religious freedom in that country?
No, I did not convert when I was in Islam. My family fled Iran after the revolution because of political and religious persecution. Mm-hmm. We fled to Italy. We lived in a convent. That's a story for another time. But and then eventually we came to the United States. And it was in Italy that I saw the cross of Jesus Christ for the first time, and I wanted to know why. I wanted to know why there was a man hanging on the wall with nails in his hands and feet. And I came to the United States, and it was the love of one woman who came alongside of our family and loved my mother and served us. And it was a love that transcended the language barrier. Mm. And then again, you know, she took us to church, and there was a cross, but the man was gone, and I wanted to know what happened to that man. And it was through Sunday school that I learned the story of that man, and I wanted him to be my father. Mm. And he has been my protector, and has given me freedom of conscience. And yes, Iran is the largest growing church next to China in the world, underground church. It is a crime to convert from Islam to Christianity. But you know, something that the American people need to know is that, you know, Iran is a nation of many ethnicities and religions. We have, you know, many different ethnic minorities, and we have Shia, we have Sunni, we have Christians, Jewish, Baha'i, Zoroastrians. But I think what's happened in Iran is that there's a disillusionment, especially in the young generation, with the teachings of the, you know, Islamist sort of fascist ideology that they're trying to propagate against the West. And, you know, they have the internet. They know that America is not the great Satan. They know that Israel is not the little Satan. Mm. In fact, during the protests right after Soleimani was eliminated, you know, the Iranian students on campuses started tweeting out pictures and videos of, you know, of walking around the American flag and the Israeli flag that is painted on every university ground, on government buildings, in schools. Children are indoctrinated from a very early age to hate the United States and hate Israel. But the great and beautiful people of Iran are starting to show the free world that that is not, they don't, that the regime and their propaganda doesn't represent them.
The voice you're listening to is that of Erica Kazrahi, who is Vice President of Human Rights Policy for the Middle East with All Things Possible. Erica, this is Ed, by the way. What do you think, and we're just coming up to the close of this segment, but what do you think are the chances of seeing a true revolution in Iran where the mullahs are overthrown and the 1979 revolution, Islamic revolution, is overturned? What do you think is happening, and what do you think the chances are of that occurring?
I think Trump moved the regime closer to collapse, but this is a fight for the Iranian people, not the United States. What we need to do is lead with, you know, policy that's based on principle. We can't cater to a regime that is the world's leading terror state for 40 years. We cannot allow an unstable regime to obtain and use nuclear weapons. We have to take a stand firm against this regime and continue to highlight the plight of freedom fighters inside Iran, in Iraq, in Lebanon, and give visibility to their fight and show that we're standing with them. And I think for prayer warriors, we need to pray. We need to pray for these people who long to have freedom. And, if I may ask that, you know, your listeners out there, there are many groups, including the Victor Marx Group, that are doing amazing work in the Middle East. And so I covet your prayers. And of course, we welcome your financial support of any amount to our team and to the work, you know, to the work that we're doing in the Middle East, spreading the gospel and providing humanitarian aid. Because when the people of the Middle East see that we are there with them, standing with them, bringing hope and love, and a message of forgiveness, that goes beyond policy. That goes beyond politics.
Yeah,
Erica, how can people get in touch with you?
Please visit our website, victormarx.com, and you can find all the information about the projects that we're involved in and get in touch with our team.
What's the website again? Spell it out, if you would.
It's Victor Marx, Victor, V-I-C-T-O-R, Marx, MARX.com.
And Victor Marx is the name of the founder of the organization, right?
Correct, yes. Correct. And Victor Marx Group and All Things Possible Ministry.
No kin to Carl. that we know of. And we can't hold family members responsible for everything else the family does.
That's
right. Not fair. Hey, Erica, thanks for being on with us. God bless you. And
God bless you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so grateful.
That's Erica Kazrahi. Now, we put her video that went viral back up on our Facebook page just now. So Today's Issues Facebook, and you can watch the video that she did 10 days ago or so, whenever it was, 2 weeks ago. It's a very compelling video, and we thank Erica for her work, and for, I didn't know she's a believer, so she came on here now. So that's good to know, and also that we pray for her work and her organization. We shall see you back. Thank you, Fred.
You're welcome.
And Steve Jordahl going to tag team with Fred, and Ed and I will be back here with our wisdom, such that it is, in 5 minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.